Let me begin by thanking all the organizers for giving me the opportunity to talk here. And also, it's a really pleasant surprise to be able to give the first talk. I had planned to put some finishing touches on my talk during the break, but I think it's good enough. And let me also warn you that I have some voice problems, so if my voice breaks down completely after 20 minutes or 10 minutes, you should not be too surprised, but I hope with a lot of water I can somehow manage. So anyway, what I'm going to talk about today is some work on quantum criticality in diluted 2D antiferromagnets. And this is a numerical work, quantum Monte Carlo simulations. And the kind of systems I have been studying are shown here. So this is a bilayer spin 1/2 Heisenberg antiferromagnet. And this is a single layer model. And you see here we have two couplings. The red ones here, J2, and the blue ones, J1. So in the clean systems, there's a quantum phase transition in these models as a function of the ratio of these couplings between an antiferromagnetic and a spin gap state. So what I want to discuss is how that quantum phase transition is modified if I dilute these systems. And I dilute them in a particular way, the reason for which I will explain later, by removing dimers. So I call these red bonds and their two spins dimers. And I remove a random fraction of those. So these systems offer, of course, then the possibility to study quantum criticality in the presence of disorder. Of course, you can do that with other models as well. You could just put in some random couplings, J, and so on. But in this particular case, where we dilute, we have another interesting aspect of the problem, namely, we can approach the geometric percolation point and study the interplay of the classical fluctuations due to percolation and quantum fluctuations. So this is somehow a new element offered by these models. So let me give some background on previous work on random antiferromagnets. So the most well-studied random quantum spin system is probably this Heisenberg chain with random couplings J. It turns out to have an infinite randomness, a fixed point, and it's also called the random singlet phase, where at zero temperature, all spins are paired up in singlets, and these singlet pairs occur on all length scales. So here I try to illustrate this. So the singlet here is illustrated by this bond between an up and a down spin. So these singlet bonds can be of any length. And there's a renormalization group procedure which predict this, and it's actually proven to be exact. It was proven by Dan Fisher, and it was based by earlier work by Ma, Dasgupta, and Hu. Namely, there's a decimation procedure where you find the strongest coupling in the system, and the spins belonging to that coupling will then form a singlet. And the only role it will play in the next step is that it will mediate to second order in perturbation theory a coupling between other spins. So in that way, one can successively lower the energy scale. And that procedure, as I said, is in fact asymptotically exact in this system. So some results of this work is that the uniform magnetic susceptibility diverges like 1 over t with a logarithmic correction. The dynamic exponent, which relates space and time scales, the dynamic exponent z is infinite in this case. So I will often, in what follows, I will somehow define the dynamic exponent in finite size. So a finite size gap for a system of length L goes like 1 over the system length to this exponent z. So this procedure, this strong coupling or strong disorder RD scheme has been applied to other models as well. And these are some of them. So for example, a dimerized chain, same as before, but now you put in every second coupling on the average is stronger and every second one is weak, and so it's a dimerized chain. That case, turns out to be a quantum Griffiths phase. So there's no the real space correlation function equal time decays exponentially with distance, but the corresponding susceptibility diverges. So that's the definition of a Griffiths phase. Whereas as you approach, and in that case Z is also finite, and as you approach the uniform random chain, Z diverges. And in that case, which I didn't mention before, the real space correlation decays like 1 over r squared. So there is there are critical fluctuations in space in that case. Now, a similar scheme, strong disorder scheme, can also be applied to higher dimensional models. So it was done by these people for the 2D and also 3D, in fact, random transverse Ising model. That also turns out to be described by this infinite randomness critical point, so Z is infinite also in that case. Now, in Heisenberg systems in higher dimension, it appears that the scaling instead is pretty conventional. So there's a recent paper by these authors where they applied this strong coupling, a strong disorder RG scheme to several models, including the J1, J2 frustrated Heisenberg model and a model consisting of coupled ladders. I'm sorry, these pictures are a bit blurred here. I pulled them out of their paper, but I didn't manage to get the correct resolution, it seems. Anyway, what they found by applying this scheme numerically was that the dynamic exponent does not diverge in any case. So let's focus first on this model of coupled ladders. That model has a quantum phase transition as a function of these two coupling strengths in the ladders and between the ladders. And what was found that in the Nell ordered phase, Z is around 1.2, whereas in the weakly coupled ladder case, Z is around 1. And then in the middle, where there is a quantum phase transition, Z was found to dip. And it's not clear here, this was also done, of course, on finite system sizes, so it's not clear if Z is really flat in these two regions and then it drops abruptly to another value, or if there really is some crossover. But in any case, Z does not behave in any anomalous way here.
What's the mean of Z in the phase?
The mean, it's the finite size gap. So if you just calculate the average gap between the ground state and first excited state, it scales with the system size as 1 over L to the power Z. So Z can be defined also in non-critical points by that. Yeah, but if you have a finite system, there's always a gap. And the gap, you know, becomes smaller, but it goes like 1 over L to the Z. Okay, so in this J1, J2 model, they found that Z is around 2 all the time, and it's not, I mean, here also there should be some quantum phase transition, at least there is in the clean system, but here there appears to be no sign of that. Here the system size they did this on is quite small, so it's not completely clear to me that this is really the full story. Anyway, so this was just some background on what has been done on these with these RG techniques. Now, before turning to these critical systems, I just want to give the background corresponding to how I got into studying these models, and that was in this old problem of site diluted Heisenberg models. So just the single layer, which corresponds to in terms of the high TC parent compounds, corresponds to doping in the planes with a non-magnetic ion. So, for example, substituting copper by zinc. So, if we do a fraction P of non-magnetic sites, then the question is, what is the sublattice magnetization as a function of that dilution fraction? And in particular, an interesting question is whether or not the critical concentration is less than the percolation point, which for site dilution is around 41%. And there was quite a lot of work on this problem in the early 90s. And in almost all of these works, the conclusion was that indeed there's a quantum phase transition before the classical percolation point. Now, in the last few years, as quantum Monte Carlo techniques have become more powerful, we have been able to study very large lattices. It became clear that this is not the case. In fact, the critical coupling coincides with the percolation point. So there was a simulation by Cato et al. Where they showed curves like this and argued that it goes very closely to the percolation point. So probably it is exactly the percolation point. And then I did a calculation where I looked directly at the percolating cluster, and I concluded that the percolating cluster itself has long-range order, so that immediately implies that the transition is a classical percolation transition. And I will just say a little bit more about that. So what was done was to consider finite systems. This is a 64 times 64 system, putting in a fraction P of holes, and the holes here are not shown in the sense that where it's only white, that's where the non-magnetic sites are. Then I find the largest cluster in the system, which in this case is these red dots, and then I do simulations in the ground state going to very, very low temperatures so that I get the ground state of this cluster, and then average over thousands of these clusters. And what I plot here is the sublattice magnetization squared averaged over these clusters as a function of 1 over L to the D over 2. And D here is the fractal dimension of this percolating cluster for site dilution. So this is basically 1 over square root of the number of sites, which is the type of scaling we have in a clean system. In that case, in the clean system, we get linear scaling if we plot it like this. Here, I just did it this way because I didn't know anything better, but in any case, you can see here that it clearly scales to a finite value, so we have order on the percolating cluster. Now, this can be compared with experiments. So I can do this not only at the percolation point, of course, I can do it for any dilution fraction, looking at the largest cluster and extracting the sublattice magnetization. Then to get the actual full sublattice magnetization, which involves all the clusters and so on, which can be measured in neutron scattering, I have to multiply this result, this infinite size extrapolated result, by the result of classical percolation, so the volume fraction of the largest cluster. And then doing some interpolations and so on, I get this red curve here. And there are experiments, a very recent neutron scattering experiment by Weick et al., where for the first time they were able to dilute lanthanum copper oxide all the way to the percolation point by doing simultaneous doping with zinc and magnesium. So before there were NQR experiments by Caretta et al. And other groups as well, where they were able to go to 15 or 20% or something like that, because there were some structural problems in going to higher doping. But you can see here that these NQR and neutron scattering experiments overlap quite nicely here. And this experimental curve appears to be systematically a little bit below this theoretical curve or numerical curve for the pure Heisenberg model. So that probably indicates that there are some other interactions in the cuprates, which of course is completely expected, that there could be some weak next nearest neighbor couplings, ring exchange terms, and so on. But qualitatively, it appears that also in the experimental system, we have to go all the way to the percolation point to destroy the long-range order. So I want to discuss quantum criticality in random system, but let me then just repeat again what happens in these clean systems. So I can have Heisenberg model in two dimension. This is a bilayer model, as I showed before, and this is a single layer model. And I can dimerize it in some way. And there are, of course, many, many ways to do that, and these are just two ways. So then, as I turn up this red coupling J2 here, or this coupling ratio, I go from an L-ordered state at zero temperature, and as I turn up this coupling, the sublattice magnetization goes to zero at some point, and that's a quantum critical point, and at the same time, then a gap opens, and in the infinitely strong coupling case, my ground state would just be a product of singlets in all these bonds. So this quantum critical point has been studied a lot, and theoretically, it's expected to be described by the 2 plus 1 dimensional nonlinear sigma model, and that has been verified numerically to quite high precision. So we understand this kind of transition quite well by now. So now I want to dilute these models, and there are many ways to do dilution. So if I do site dilution of the kind I described for the single layer, I can clearly do that, but then the problem is that in a spin-gapped system, so if I'm on that disordered, in that disordered phase of the antiferromagnet, and I put in these site defects, then I get localized moments forming around them, and those localized moments interact with each other through the bulk system, and they will in fact order. So that means that the quantum critical point is in fact ruined by these impurities. There is in fact no quantum critical point. There is order no matter what coupling strength I have in my system. So that's the reason to consider either bond or dimer dilution. So bond dilution would be just to cut some of these nearest neighbor couplings. And dimer dilution, with that I mean removing also the two spins. And again, these are the models I will study, so I remove at random these dimers or those dimers. And of course, one of the things I'm interested in is whether these two models will behave in the same way or whether they will be different. So let me first talk about the bilayer model. So this has been studied not only by me, but also by Weick and Graven in 2002, and there's a very recent work by Skrepnek, Matthias Voita, and Thomas Voita on this model. So now going back to the single layer model, which we of course recover if J2 is zero here. As I told you before, the percolating cluster in that case has long range order. So that means that if I just couple those two percolating clusters very weakly with a small J2, then I would expect that long range order to remain for some time. So I would expect the phase diagram as a function of the coupling G and the dilution P to have a flat portion like this, where this transition is also a purely classical percolation transition. Then when G is strong enough, and I call that value G star, there will be some special point at which the long range order on the percolating cluster goes away. And that is, in a sense, a multi-critical point, because it's critical both due to geometrical percolation and because of quantum fluctuations. And after that point, the curve will turn over like this, so there will be a quantum phase transition before the percolation point. So this is what would be qualitatively expected based on the physics of the single layer, and it has been verified by simulations. So here I just show again some results for the sublattice magnetization versus the inverse square root of the system size. So that the old result of independent single layers, we have a sublattice magnetization scaling to some finite value, and that's the case also for these two couplings. But then clearly after that we start to see that the sublattice magnetization scales away to zero. So the critical point is somewhere between these red and blue curves, and my best estimate right now is that it's around 0.12. So that's this multi-critical point. Now, on this blue curve here, the Harris criterion says that disorder should be relevant. So the Harris criterion says that the correlation length exponent has to be larger than 2 over d. So in this case, the correlation length exponent in the clean system is less than 2 over d. So that means disorder is relevant. And this has recently been confirmed in simulations of a classical model by Skinetnik, Voita, and Voita. So what they did was to say the following. If I dilute these dimers in this case, I know that the clean system is described by the 2 plus 1 dimensional nonlinear sigma model, a lattice version of which is essentially the 3D classical Heisenberg model. When I dilute the dimers, I don't have any dangling spins, if you will. I don't have any Berry faces in a field theory picture. So it should be okay to study the 3D classical model where I put in some columnar defects. So that was their argument, and they did that simulation on several points below the percolation point. And what they found is that the scaling is conventional in the sense that no matter where you sit on this curve, the exponents are always the same. And in particular, they found that the dynamic exponent is around 1.3 on that curve. So I will not discuss this more, but I will focus really on what's happening on this point in particular and a little bit on more on that curve as well, on that horizontal segment. So, and I want to discuss some critical exponents at that multi-critical point. And the first thing I will talk about is the uniform magnetic susceptibility. So, it has a quantum critical scaling form at finite temperature, a well-known form, namely the susceptibility should be a constant plus some factor times t to the d over z minus 1, where d is the dimensionality and z is the dynamic exponent. Exactly at the critical point, this constant offset a will be 0. If I'm in the ordered phase, eventually there will be a crossover to some other form, and the scaling will be to a finite zero temperature susceptibility. But this form here offers a way to extract the dynamic exponent. And in this case, now, again, I see it exactly at the percolation point, so d is that fractal dimensionality 91.48. Now, one can do also a corresponding zero temperature scaling of the susceptibility. But then a slight problem is that the ground states of all these clusters I'm looking at have a singlet ground state. So that means that the susceptibility at q equals 0 is strictly equal to 0. So I cannot really study the scaling of that quantity. But I can use the wave number going to 0, but not being exactly 0. This is, of course, the vanishing susceptibility is due to the conservation law. The magnetization is conserved. But for this quantity, I don't have that conservation law, and this should be a well-behaved function as I approach long wavelengths. Then, if I further note that the correlation length in the quantum critical regime diverges as t to the minus z, then I can substitute that in here, and then I can put in the system length instead of the correlation length, and I get the result that this zero temperature quantity should scale like some constant plus b times l to the z minus d. So these two scaling expressions can be used numerically to check the consistency. I would like both these to give the same result. So here are the results. And on the left panel I have the finite temperature results. So let me discuss those first. So here what I have done is to adjust my dynamic exponent in such a way that I get a linear behavior for all these curves. And it turns out, using just a single exponent around 1.36, I can get a linear behavior for all these couplings. And this linearity is in fact very good. It's completely consistent within error bars and so on. So this is one way to extract the dynamic exponent. And so here again you can see that for the red dots here, that's g equals 0.1. I scaled to a small finite value, so that should mean that the system is still ordered in the ground state in this case, whereas the next 1.12 scales below zero, meaning that eventually it will cross over to a different form and go, of course, exactly to zero. But here, what to note is really that I can explain all these susceptibility curves with the same dynamic exponent. And now turning to this zero temperature scaling, here I show a particular case of g equals 0.08. So I show the same red curve as that one. And in addition, I show this zero temperature long wavelength susceptibility, which I now have plot versus L to the D minus Z, using the same dynamic exponent as for that curve. And what you can see here is that that also depends linearly on that quantity. So these two scalings are completely consistent here, and I also scale into the same value. So this gives me some confidence that this form actually holds, because there's a non-trivial relationship involving the correlation length that goes from, that is involved from going from here to here. So I believe that this is quite strong evidence for this kind of scaling. Now, there's one thing to note here. Let me go back here a little. I don't see any low temperature crossover here. So the lowest temperatures here are quite low. They're in fact, the temperature is J over 512. So these are quite low temperatures. If I'm on the ordered side in a clean system, eventually I would see some change in behavior corresponding to the so-called renormalized classical regime, which I show here. So for clean 2D antiferromagnets, we have this well-known Chakravarti Halperin Nelson crossover phase diagram. So this is not really a phase diagram, this just indicates crossover lines. So at zero temperature, as a function of G, we have a quantum critical point at which the long-range antiferromagnetism goes away and the spin gap opens. And then there are three finite temperature scaling regimes that can be reached depending on what G is. So if G is below the critical value, then we should, at low temperature, have a so-called renormalized classical regime where, among other things, the correlation length diverges exponentially as we go to zero temperature. On this side, again, we have a spin gap, so that means the correlation length will go to a constant value at zero temperature. And in this quantum critical regime, we are controlled by the critical point, so the correlation length goes like 1 over t to the z, for example. And this quantum critical behavior can be seen also away from the critical point, but there will be crossovers either into renormalized classical or quantum disordered at some temperature scale. And that temperature scale here is controlled by the spin stiffness constant, and on that side it's controlled by the spin gap. But now again, going back to these pictures here, I don't see any sign of low temperature crossover. Of course, it could be that I'm simply not at low enough temperature, but as I already said, these temperatures are quite low. So my conjecture here is, in fact, that there is no crossover. And why would that be? Well, on the percolating cluster, It's clear that the spin stiffness defined in terms of a twist in the boundary condition really is zero in an infinite system. So somehow it seems that it's really that global infinite distance stiffness that controls the crossover, and since that is zero, this crossover line is pushed down to zero temperature. So there is no crossover. So that's a conjecture at this point, and if anybody has some ideas of what else could control a crossover and so on, I would be happy to know. Okay, now there are other ways I can check this scaling again. Now I will focus again on this multi-critical point. And I told you how I have extracted Z using the susceptibility scaling. But there are other ways I can check this scaling as well. For example, I can look at the antiferromagnetic quantities around Q equals pi pi. So I can look at the static structure factor at pi pi, and that should scale as L to the 1 minus the correlation exponent eta. And I can look at the corresponding susceptibility, which involves this cubo integral. And that should scale with the power z higher than the structure factor. So if I extract these two exponents, which I call here gamma s and gamma chi, then the dynamic exponent should be the difference between the two. And here I show some results at g equals 0.12, which is not exactly the critical point, but it's very close to the critical point. And you can see here that gamma s and gamma chi have a difference 1.36, which is exactly what I extracted before using the uniform susceptibility. So this is additional evidence that this multi-critical point really has that kind of dynamic exponent. Now, does this have any experimental relevance? Well, it's not completely clear yet, but this has been suggested by myself as well as by Bike and Grave, and that what they see in their neutron scattering experiments close to the percolation point in this material is in fact a correlation length which diverges with a dynamic exponent which is around 1.4, which is very close to the 1.36 that I discussed for this multi-critical point. So could this have any connection? So then the idea is that if we consider some extended parameter space, now these materials are single layer materials, but if you just imagine some extended parameter space, something like introducing a bilayer coupling, which of course is not there in the material, but you can theoretically think of it, then in that extended parameter space, clearly there will be this multi-critical point, and it could be that the single layer is somehow, in some sense, close enough to that multi-critical point that the scaling behavior could be affected by it, at least in some temperature range before we cross over away from the regime controlled by that critical point. So that was suggested. But then, of course, the question arises is how universal is this kind of behavior that I found, or we found for the bilayer magnet? Can we do something else and see a similar behavior, for example, in a single layer model? So that was the reason why I started to look at this model with maybe the hope of seeing the same thing, or my guess was that it would be quite similar, but it turns out that it's not quite similar. And again, let's see what we would expect for the phase diagram. So here again, I draw a phase diagram as a function of this coupling ratio and a dilution fraction. And again, I would expect some flat portion here where the percolating cluster would be ordered, so it would be similar to the bilayer model, and then for some strong enough coupling, that order would go away, and then the curve turns down like this. But there's one thing to note in this model which makes it a little bit different immediately. Namely, if my strong coupling or coupling J2 is, well, so if it's not the stronger coupling, but if it's, for example, zero, then it's clear that I have a slightly different lattice. So if the red coupling is zero, I get this brick wall lattice. And since I now lack some couplings that I have in that model, it's clear that the percolation point can be different. So in this case, the percolation point is actually one half of the dimers removed, and that's because maybe you can see it here that these dimers, they sort of form a triangular lattice in terms of how they are connected to each other. And site percolation on a triangular lattice has p equals one half as the percolation point. But when I do this brick wall lattice corresponding to zero J2, the percolation point is in fact 0.29. So that means that the phase diagram instead has to look something like this, that on when G is zero, you cannot clearly have order on the percolating cluster, because that would be above the percolating point for this lattice. So there has to be a regime here between these points where the system is disordered. And that will have some consequences for crossovers and so on as you approach this point. So again, just turning to some results. Again, looking at the uniform susceptibility first, just to get a feeling for what's going on. So here I plot the uniform susceptibility for some values of G larger than one. So the red couplings here are stronger than the blue couplings. And now you can see the behavior is quite different from what I found in the bilayer. Namely, for G equals 1.1 and 1.2, there's a low temperature divergence in the susceptibility. And then for higher couplings, the susceptibility turns down and vanishes as T goes to zero. If I zoom in a region where the behavior changes here, I get something like this. So I get some coupling 1.247 or thereabouts. I get some curve which neither drops to zero nor diverges. Instead, it appears to scale linearly to some constant value. And in terms of a dynamic exponent, that in fact means that Z equals D. So I appear to have some sort of special or critical point at this value. And then I have a divergent susceptibility below that value instead of in the bilayer where I had something quite different. Now, for G larger than 1 but less than this special value where it scales to a constant, it turns out that the susceptibility is very closely 1 over square root. So here I show some susceptibilities plotted on versus 1 over square root of T, and you can see that all these three follow a linear behavior very nicely in that case. So now I'm sitting somewhere here close to but not at this critical point, or a little bit above here. Now if I go further down here, this square root behavior ends, and instead I get some t to the minus alpha behavior where alpha now depends on G. And in particular, if I go all the way to this point where J2 is zero, to this brick wall lattice, I get exactly a Curie behavior, 1 over T susceptibility. And I believe that's due to the fact that in this brick wall lattice at the percolation point, I break up the percolating cluster into smaller pieces. And those smaller pieces, they can have these unpaired or dangling spins that can, so for example, the size of the cluster may be odd even. So it's clear that I have to have some sort of divergent susceptibility there. And evidently it's a pure Curie law in that case. So if I plot my susceptibility exponent, it looks like this. It goes from 1 at zero coupling and then approaches a half, and then it drops to zero exactly at that special point. And if I assume that this susceptibility law holds, and this is a quite general result of hyperscaling, then I get a dynamic exponent which diverges, and at this special point it jumps from z equals 2 times the dimensionality, which is about 3.9, it drops to be equal to d itself. Now again, I can check this against that zero temperature scaling which I described for the bilayer. So the zero temperature susceptibility in the long wavelength limit should scale like L to the 2 minus D. And if I do that using the dynamic exponent I extract here, I show a result here for G equals 1.0, then I get completely consistent scaling. So again, I believe that this somehow makes sense. And just to convince you again that there's no long range order here. So if I plot the sublattice magnetization versus the inverse system size, I don't see any sign of a finite sublattice magnetization. So this makes me believe that there's actually a line of critical points in this model. So unlike the bilayer where there was long range order on this line here, the system is now critical on this whole line. And why that is, I really don't know. I mean, that's a big mystery. I would have expected the percolating cluster to be ordered here as well, but apparently it's not. And again, I can check my scaling at this point using these antiferromagnetic quantities as well. And now the agreement is not as good as it was for the bilayer. So here I plot the structure factor and the susceptibility at pi on a log-log scale. And I do these linear fits. And the difference in this case should be, according to that susceptibility scaling, it should be equal to the dimensionality, which is around 1.9, but it's 1.7. And I would say that's probably close enough to be consistent, considering that there are probably non-asymptotic corrections and so on. So I would say that this is marginally consistent. Okay. So let me just skip the last graph and get to the conclusions. So I have studied two models which I think serve as examples of that you can find unusual chronocritical behavior also in 2D Heisenberg disordered systems. Unlike what was predicted based on these RG studies of random J models, where pretty conventional scaling was predicted. And here, at least in this model, you get something quite surprising, namely a line of critical points. And in both cases, you have some special multi-critical point, but those points are not the same in these two cases. They have different exponents. And in this case, I should mention that there was this work by Skrepnek, Wojta, and Wojta, where they predicted conventional scaling on this curve. I didn't show any results, but I have actually confirmed that I do get the same exponent that they predict on this curve as well. So that appears to be the same in this model as well as in that model. Now, open questions include, why does the single layer have a line of critical points? And what are really the conditions under which the percolating cluster can have a long-range order? And there are, of course, many other dimerized models one could study, and it will be interesting also to look at some other models to see if they fall into these two classes or whether there are still other scaling behaviors possible in these dimer-diluted models. So thank you for your attention.
Plenty of time for questions, comments, and discussion. This is not a good sign. Okay. Santos, thank you.
So in this bilayer case where you said there was no crossover on the ordered side,
yep.
You said you could also calculate the correlation function itself, like the So is the form of the correlation function changed?
Yes, yes, didn't I show one? Yeah, okay, so I showed this result exactly at this multi-critical point. So this is the correlation function, S of pi pi, so it decays with this power law. I didn't show results. Well, okay, yes, I have the results also. Okay, I did show. Yeah, so this is S of pi pi. So it scales the finite value here, so there's long range order.
There's no sign of crossover in any quantity?
No. Yeah, it's surprising. But on the other hand, I mean, we know that in the clean system, it's the spin stiffness which controls the crossover. So here, the spin stiffness is zero. So what the question is, what could control a crossover? And I think what's in some models, one could probably have a crossover. But in this model, maybe the absence of crossover also has to do with the symmetry here. I mean, this bilayer has this bilayer exchange symmetry. So I don't know. Do you have any suggestions why? What else could control a crossover?
The stiffness defined with the definition of the stiffness involves some d. Right. I mean, so what d?
Oh, you mean the dimensionality?
Yeah. When you change boundary conditions, and then
yeah,
clean system, you'd say it's a coefficient of the l to the b minus 1.
Yeah.
Right. So here, I don't know.
Okay, so the definition I use, okay, so I mean it's, if you take a classical model, classical Heisenberg model on a percolating cluster, this has been studied a lot, and the scaling away of the stiffness as a function of the system size is well known. It's governed by the conductivity exponent, random resistor network conductivity exponent. At least in the site diluted, yeah, in the single site diluted layer, I confirm that scaling holds also in this quantum model. So I mean, it's clear that with that standard definition, the stiffness certainly goes away for an infinite lattice. But the question is whether the crossover really has to be controlled by that global stiffness, or if there's some, you know, more local stiffness that could control it. And some people I've talked to, you know, insist that, you know, there's a local stiffness and that should control the crossover, but I don't see any, so.
Eugene?
Yeah, and also, yes, yeah, and the dynamic exponent is larger than one, so that means that the velocity vanishes as well. Right?
Should use the microphone because I think we're recording everything, right?
Yeah,
both
recording,
comments.
And also people at the back will not be able to hear the
question.
Other questions?
I have one, I guess. I mean, a different question about the, I guess it's about the genericness of these flat percolation lines.
Yep.
And this is probably asking you to speculate in some sense, but so you have your final graph of the two of them. So suppose one were to take your model and add an additional exchange, let's say between two further away sites on opposite sublattices,
yep,
such a way that you can probably still do quantum Monte Carlo,
yep,
but such that you're not actually cutting the cluster apart.
Yes, but probably the percolation point would change, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I would probably, yeah. Yeah.
So you add that very weakly. Can you speculate on what happens to the phase diagram? Is that something that happens?
Okay, so
at?
Okay, so the percolation point would change. So these you know, lines would be pushed up. If that coupling is very weak, there would of course be some crossover region where, I mean, there would be some region where you are still somehow governed by this line here, but then there would be a crossover to some behavior corresponding to some other percolation point. But what the nature of that one would be, you know, I guess I don't know. I mean, I guess my inclination would be to believe that, okay, I guess the dimensionality should be the same. It's still site percolation, so the dimensionality would be the same. So my inclination would be to say that it should probably be the same, but this is all just shifted up.
If we take the case on the right, where the line is...
That's a good point, because here things could change, because here I guess you would move this percolation point as well, and it's not clear. It could even, you know, become the same as that point.
And I guess I would have thought if I had a weak coupling, since things are not long-range ordered along that line, I wouldn't move the location of the ordered to paramagnetic, ordered to disordered line a great deal by adding a node. We'd shift only a small amount.
If this is governed by percolation, I mean, if your coupling is very weak, you have a different percolation point, I think. And I think if you include that other coupling, probably this percolation point would then coincide with that one. I'm not 100% sure.
So the sharp question is there always some somehow percolation governed line in that?
I would think so. But to my surprise, I found, I really did studies of this model to somehow confirm that this is universal, but I found another possibility. So I don't know now if, as I already said, I don't know if, you know, maybe there are more possibilities even. It appears that, you know, the fact that you can have percolation interplaying with confluctuations makes for maybe surprisingly complex phase diagrams, and there may be more possibilities.
Yeah, okay. I was imagining it could simplify and you end up with only the blue line.
Maybe. Well, we have to see.
Other questions, comments? Is anything known about other models? I mean, you talked about two specific models, but there are other models where percolation quantum magnetism compete. You have a comment on any of them?
I'm not aware. Well, in spin models, I'm not aware of too many other works, except, there's work on the transverse icing model by Sentil and Sachdev. And that actually has a phase diagram almost, identical to this one, except that in that case, the dynamic exponent is infinite here. So you have activated dynamic scaling, or whatever you call it, on this curve. But it looks the same. You have this special point where the cluster becomes disordered and so on.
I see. So this is not really a completely unknown.
Yeah, one thing was that maybe Sentil wants to say something about this. They did this work on the transverse icing model in 2D, and the argument was that in the Heisenberg model this would not be the case, because the argument was that since the percolating cluster has one-dimensional line segments, the percolating cluster should not be ordered. So actually this result has been, some people refused to believe this for a long time. Sentil was not one of them, but some people resisted believing this, and some people said it's completely trivial. So this was that kind of result.
Okay, I was going to ask Sentil to make comments. Now I understand why he looks so disturbed.
So you guess is wrong, right?
I mean, that was just a guess, right? I mean, you.
The icing case was not a guess.
No, so maybe you can explain it was not a wild guess, I'm sure. It was a well-educated guess. Maybe you can explain the rationale underlying the speculation.
Yes, the reasoning was that in the icing case, the percolating cluster is long one-dimensional segments, and in 1D, the transverse field icing model is ordered for weak transverse fields, but the O3 rotor model is not. So the thinking was that the correlations would be cut off by these long chains, but that doesn't seem to be happening. And in fact, various people have done the spin wave theory based on the percolating cluster, and principle approximation, that seems to predict that you don't kill log n total or whatever is mentioned.
Yeah.
That's totally correct.
Anything else? Well, if not, let's thank Anders for starting out the conference very nicely.